This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 19th of December 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 18th of December 2014, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: £165 million Silver Hill project to go ahead, NatWest to close Alsford branch, and council to scrap rent-free scheme for tenants. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
£165 million Silver Hill project to go ahead. Controversial changes to Winchester's Silver Hill scheme have been approved by civic chiefs in a decision which could change the face of the city. 5 acres of the city centre are set to be demolished and replaced by shops, homes and parking in a £165 million project agreed by Winchester City Council last Thursday. City planners unanimously passed contentious changes to scrap all 100 affordable flats, a bus station, office space and a youth centre from the development. They will be replaced by an on-street bus interchange and another 40,000 square feet of retail after developer Henderson said the original plans, approved in 2009, would no longer return enough profit. Protesters who marched against civic chiefs' approach to the major development last month are now considering a second demonstration. Around 100 people attended a tense planning committee in Winchester Guildhall, which heard pleas from residents and input from key figures on both sides. Critics disputed claims that affordable housing would threaten the scheme's viability and said the development would wreck Winchester's unique character. Councillor Kim Gottlieb said, "This city, this location, deserves beauty and inspiration. The scheme, as shown, will shame us. The architecture is simply not good enough for the centre of the ancient capital and the birthplace of England." The council received almost 1,000 objections and 132 letters of support for the revised scheme. Planners, business leaders and heritage trustees said the city has always moved with the times and the rundown area is desperate for renewal. Councillor Jane Rutter said Silver Hill is a decaying sore in the heart of Winchester. "No sign of this historic area remains," she said. "This scheme will bring back those Saxon streets and reinvigorate this whole of the city. Winchester is not a museum town. It is a vibrant and living city. We need to keep it vibrant and living. We are desperate for this new development." The committee granted planning permission after 8 hours of debate. Planning permission was one of the last hurdles for the long-touted scheme, which has faced protests, petitions, legal action and government intervention in a saga dating back to the 1990s. But further challenges loom for the City Council as it faces more protests and a High Court decision hearing over its decision to allow Henderson to propose the changes this summer. Mike Caldwell, who led a march of more than 1,000 against the Council's alleged lack of consultation on major development last month, said another protest was highly likely in the wake of the meeting. City Council leader Bob Humby told the Hampshire Chronicle he was very pleased with the committee's decision. "It was a very good, thorough debate," he said. "I'm pleased that after 18 years of this, we finally got to a decision where we can go forward." Campaigner Karen Barrett, who spoke at the meeting, said, "I knew all along it was a done deal. I didn't expect the members of the planning committee to be quite so gutless. It is a sad, sad day for Winchester."
NatWest to close Alsford branch. Councillors disappointed with bank's decision. Alsford town councillors say they are disappointed following a bank's decision to close the local branch. NatWest in Alsford will shut next year, and its two staff will either be relocated or made redundant. The East Street-based branch is now opening its doors to customers to help them with different ways to bank, said bank spokesman Sarah Binney. In a statement, she said, "We have taken the difficult decision to close our NatWest Alsford branch on March the 25th, 2015. The number of transactions taking place at this branch has dropped by 15% over the last few years. Over our whole branch network, there has been a 30% drop in branch transactions since 2010, as people do their banking where and when it is convenient for them, whilst online and mobile transactions have grown by over 200%. We expect these trends to continue as more and more of our customers bank with us through our mobile app, by online and telephone, and through our upgraded ATM network. When we close a branch, we take a number of factors into account, including usage and alternative ways to bank with us in the local area." The Chronicle broke the news to Chairman of Alsford Chamber of Commerce, Simon Evans. He said, "I didn't know about that. I bank with NatWest. That's a bit weird, isn't it? I would have to drive to a branch now, wouldn't I? They obviously have not made it public knowledge because no one has said anything to me. They are obviously not busy enough." The bank says that customers can use the post office to withdraw cash, check balances and make deposits, but Town Council Chairman Lisa Griffiths says she still thinks it will cause problems for local businesses and the elderly. She said, "It is disappointing. We have a lot of elderly residents in Alsford. I'm sure it will make their lives very difficult. It's for profitability, and unfortunately lots of the banks are closing branches. We still have Lloyds and Barclays, and there will be the post office, but it's about making sure people know about alternative facilities. If you are a local business and you use them for your cash facilities, you can't then transfer that on a daily basis or go into Winchester or Alton. It will probably be a problem for them." Jan Field, chair of the Alsford Society, said it was unfortunate and thought that online services would not be used by older customers. She said, "I imagine that some people will change their bank account. Lots of people, particularly older people, are very reluctant to get involved with online banking. They feel it isn't safe, and they like to see a face and have that personal connection and support. Towns like Alsford are very successful because there is that connection with people." The closure comes as part of the bank's £1 billion investment over the next few years to improve online and mobile banking and upgrade 400 branches across the country.
Council to scrap rent-free weeks scheme for tenants. Housing chiefs have scrapped a scheme allowing 5,000 Winchester Council tenants to take breaks in their rent payments. Rent-free weeks allow tenants to pay their rent in advance and take a week off four times a year. The scheme is often used to fund seasonal spending such as Christmas shopping or summer holidays, but does not mean tenants pay any less over the year. Winchester City councillors have agreed that the scheme is confusing and increasingly irrelevant for tenants as monthly payments grow in popularity. Rent-free weeks will also become harder to manage when the government introduces universal credit welfare reforms, Housing Finance Chief Bob Gath told the Cabinet Housing Committee. Head of Housing Services, Richard Botham, stressed that tenants can arrange to keep rent-free weeks by contacting the council's rent service team. The committee also agreed to increase social rents by 2.2% from April, in line with inflation and new government recommendations. An average weekly rent on a council home will jump from £100.47 to £102.68.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Brock, Doris Brock, on the 6th of December. Horton, Rita Horton, at home on the 5th of December, aged 76. Joshua, Louise Ida Joshua, on the 7th of December, aged 99. Offer, Dennis Alfred Offer, on the 9th of December, aged 85. Soper, Leonard Albert George Soper, on the 11th of December, aged 86. Vincent, Prunella Vincent, on the 14th of December, at Countess Mountbatten House. Wood, Jean, known as Jean Wood, on the 9th of December, aged 92. And next we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by Rosemary Baker, and she entitles it Reading Too Much into a Christmas Greeting Card. I have just received a Christmas card with the title The Christmas Story. The picture on the front is made up of four small pictures. The first is of Mary riding on a donkey with Joseph. The second shows a star over a stable. The third, a shepherd with his sheep looking at a small town in the distance. And the fourth, the three wise men travelling towards the star. All the essential elements of the traditional biblical Christmas story, all are indicative of an aspect of the story and worthy of reflection in their own right. We have received quite a few cards already, and I know I have put ours somewhere safe. I will have another search for the address book. I'm not sure if it's because I am a psychiatrist that I take a particular interest in who sends what sort of card. Of course, it might be completely random. Have they sent a religious card because they know I am a minister? Or is it because they are religious, or both? Have they chosen a picture of a dog because they know I like dogs, or do they? And so on. Then there is the question of the charity the card might support. Is it selected because of some illness or condition that someone in their family has? Is it their favourite charity? A cause they support, such as World Wildlife, or just a group of good causes, and the cards are at the end of the aisle conveniently placed in the supermarket. Is it an obscure charity to baffle us or to impress? Humorous cards are interesting, whose sense of humour you have to know people very well to share some jokes. Lastly, there is the reason it was sent. Are we on the list and get sent one regardless of whether we sent one last year? Sometimes people don't send local cards, saying they prefer to offer greetings in person, and then you don't see them because you are away. Often these days we seem to get them from businesses, and we are a little sceptical as to their motives. The cards from the postman, etc., might be so we remember their names for that little extra included in their cards, perhaps. Apparently, the first printed Christmas card was sent in 1843 by a British businessman, so the tradition is not that old, and maybe the motive was not entirely altruistic. Today it seems we each send an average of 50 cards a person. Whatever your reason and motive for sending them, they can cheer people up, keep people in contact, and raise a lot of money for charity. I wish you all a blessed and peaceful Christmas.
Next, we move on to the letters to the editor. of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Surprise, surprise, there are quite a lot of letters about the Silver Hill development, so we'll start off with those.
And this first letter from Peter Marsh is entitled A Disingenuous Decision on Homes. Sir, it now becomes clear just how disingenuous the Winchester City Council Cabinet were when they passed responsibility to the Planning Committee to ensure that affordable homes were delivered on Silver Hill. They never wanted any affordable homes on Silver Hill, which is why they never contested the viability assessment produced by Henderson. This is the only council in the country I know of whose lead housing member is supported by both Cabinet and Planning Committee members in stating that there is no need for any more affordable housing in the city centre. I might understand, if not accept, this argument if the council had secured the £10 million needed to fund 100 homes off-site. Instead, they have traded 100 intermediate and social homes on Silver Hill for just £1 million. That's enough for between 3 and 7 social homes on council-owned land. That's a poor value swap delivered by a weak Tory administration propped up by lapdog Lib Dems. Shame on both their houses. That's from Peter Marsh, East Stratton.
Elizabeth Crawley writes, low-pro roof lines key to historic cities. Sir, if the council is determined to jeopardise any claim Winchester may have to be a historic town worth visiting, then to build 2 7-storey towers close to the Broadway is a very effective way to do so. The towers will be over twice as high as the average 3-storey roof line. Elsewhere in this country and in Europe, the finest surviving historic towns have kept their traditional low roof line. This factor is crucial and should be, is, well known to every architect. Once towers are built, others will follow. Winchester people have made a strong protest over the Silver Hill plans, but have councillors taken in the key factors that must change? The 3-storey roof line is a key factor, very possibly the main one, if Winchester is to retain what is left of its fine, much-loved historic character. The Christmas market brings huge crowds, but only for 4 weeks of the year. That's by Elizabeth Crawley, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
W.A.C. Halliwell says, this carbuncle isn't suitable for our city. Sir, for Councillor Humby to pontificate about planning matters which only affect the city is the outside of enough. He neither lives in Winchester, nor does he represent the citizens of Winchester. He illustrates only too well the fact that Winchester City Council is not in any real sense Winchester City Council, having as it does representation by a minority of 18 councillors out of a total of 57. He mentions the town forum, but he must be as aware as are the residents of Winchester that it is a talking shop, set up as a sop to the city with no real power or authority. I wonder how he would feel if an eyesore such as the proposed Silver Hill development were proposed for Curdridge or Aylesbury. The number of residents who turned out to march shows that a majority of residents of Winchester do not think that this carbuncle is suitable for the city of Winchester, so pipe down, Mr. Humby, if you please. W.A.C. Halliwell, St. James's Villas, Winchester.
not just newcomers who are protesting, says Marilyn Smuland. Sir Andrew Napier surmises that most of the marchers protesting about the planned changes in Winchester have moved to the city as adults and want to keep their Winchester exactly as it is. First Person Chronicle, December the 11th. Well, that certainly doesn't describe me. Like previous generations of my family, I was born in Winchester, grew up here, and have lived and worked in the city all my adult life. I joined the march, my first demonstration at the age of 64, because I am very proud of my city and very concerned that the present development proposals are not what Winchester needs. I don't want to keep Winchester exactly as it is. I simply feel, like so many who marched, that my Winchester deserves better, and that this is achievable if the City Council is prepared to listen. That's from Marilyn Smuland, Colebrook Street, Winchester.
The next letter is written by Michael Cady, and I think it is tongue-in-cheek. The heading is A Taste of What's to Come. Sir, following the rubber-stamping victory for deaf ears, that was the Silver Hill Planning Committee meeting, a range of exciting new developments has been announced by the City Council. First, the cathedral is to be turned into a number of luxury apartments. We'll lower the roofline of the cathedral, of course, the architect explained, so that it does not interfere with the wonderful roofline of the Silver Hill development. This is marvellous and completely in keeping with the history of the city, said a leading member of the planning department. As a charitable compensation, we'll buy some second-hand caravans for poor people to live in, said the developer. Meanwhile, Hyde is to be demolished in its entirety to make way for office accommodation. After all, Silver Hill will need shoppers now that no one else will come to the city, explained the developer. He went on to say that, sadly, they would only make a few billion pounds from the deal, but they could achieve that by milking the city dry. And lastly, King Alfred is to be removed from his pedestal in the Broadway and replaced by a 10-metre-high statue of a pound coin. Winchester is going to see much more street art like this, said a councillor. It entirely reflects our values and is one of the five pieces of silver we got for selling the city's soul. More developments are expected in the coming weeks. That was by Michael Cady of Upsonbourne.
The city centre is besieged, says Michael Hoare. Sir, living in the centre of town, it is of course customary to take a wander into town over the weekend. Except, at the moment, wandering at this time of year is impossible. The town has almost become besieged by market stalls. Today, which was yesterday actually, December the 14th, we had the farmers' market, the vintage market, and the Christmas market all on simultaneously, meaning that people simply couldn't stop and browse. It was too busy for our streets. I welcome the variety that the market stalls bring, but like anywhere, there is a physical limit to the amount of throughput the streets can take. And when you hear people openly talking about how ridiculous it is that you can't get around, regardless of whether they are residents or tourists, it sets a poor example. As for the Christmas market, surely we have learned our lesson by now. At peak times, when people visiting our town arrive, it has become a mass of human lava, if you will. You can't stop to buy anything. You are merely moved along in the crowd. The stewarding seems completely ineffective. Perhaps we need to manage the crowds better before people simply decide they don't wish to visit any longer. Maybe we could have a fallow year to work it out better. Even Glastonbury does that. Michael Hoare, North Walls, Winchester.
Andrew Allen says, extra care housing plan, a monstrosity. Sir, I am struggling to understand the City Council's planning policy in respect of this council-proposed extra care facility to be built on the surface car park in Chesil Street. Whilst understanding and supporting the need for extra care provision, Chesil Street as a location is totally unsuitable due to the dangerous narrow pavement access for the elderly into town along Chesil Street and over the bridge. The proposed design, to put it bluntly, is a monstrosity of industrial scale and in no way complements the special architecture of this historic street, in which there are 12 Grade 2 listed dwellings. I live in one of these, which has recently been identified as probably one of the three oldest dwellings in Winchester. My building is subject to stringent planning restrictions, which means I am unable to do anything without first seeking listed buildings' consent. For example, I cannot replace my wooden window with UPVC, now much improved and look like wood. Yet the modern solid block and glass design of the proposed completely flouts the spirit of these restrictions or takes into account the need to be sympathetic to specific architecture of the street, which is also classified as a conservation area. But this is being conveniently ignored. The council and their planners seem to consider Chesil Street but a major route into the city. But they overlook at their peril the fact that visitors' first impression of historic Winchester will be of this massive, overpowering, factory-like development rather than the present lovely open view of the wooded slopes of the equally historic wooded St Giles Hill, which has been there for centuries. It will be lost forever. That's from Andrew Allen, Chesil Street, Winchester.
Rodney Skinner writes, distracted by a bright speed indicator. Sir, on a recent Saturday at about 10 a.m, I drove into Four Marks from Ropley. Some 200 yards ahead was a very bright amber light. It was distracting the drivers in front of me and was very disconcerting to me, as I had no idea what it was. As I got closer, it turned out to be a speed indicator run by the local civvy speed cops. I do not mind being told I'm over the limit, but I resent having a smiley face telling me I'm doing 29 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour limit. I know what speed I'm doing. What was worse was that the intensity of the light. It was like looking into the sun. As I got within 25 yards of the sign, I had to shield my eyes, as did the driver behind me. I had hoped to have a word with the group on my way back, but they'd gone. Written by Rodney Skinner, Town Close, Ropley.
Keith Webb says, place blue badges face side up. Sir, it is pleasing to read that, not before time, something of a campaign to look into the misuse of disabled parking badges in Hampshire was reported in the Hampshire Chronicle of December the 11th. As a result, some badges were confiscated. There is one extremely simple remedy to misuse of badges. When in use, they should be placed in the car, face side up, so that it would be much easier to ascertain if the disabled badge holder is not either a passenger or driving the car. As it is, the card is required to be placed in a visible position, but photograph side down. As the holder of a badge, I would have absolutely no objection if this was enforced. If there is any other information needed by the authorities, a simple redesign of the card could be undertaken. To make compliance even more effective, any member of the public able to prove misuse of a card should be rewarded with, say, £50 to make it worthwhile. These days, most of us carry mobile phones with cameras, and evidence would be easy to produce. For some reason, authorities in Britain go out of their way to make avoiding enforcement too easy. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
Phil Yates says, we should oppose Hyde Garden Dig. Sir, Sue Nelms, chair of Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden, is quite right to oppose any excavation of the beautifully laid-out garden which took years to plan, instigated by Barbara Hall. Chronicle, December the 11th. We know that Alfred, along with his wife, Aelswitha, and son, Edward the Elder, are buried in the vicinity of Hyde. Surely it is not necessary to disrupt the layout just to investigate where they might be buried. There is no guarantee at the end of the dig that anything will come to light. Leave well alone. I am a member of Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden, and I am sure that other friends will back Sue to the hilt in opposing the suggestion of the proposed works. I notice from the report that the City Council Chief Executive Simon Eden met the chairman of Hyde 900, Professor Martin Biddle, and the university to discuss the matter. But it would appear that no representative of Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden was invited. As custodians of the garden, surely Sue or a member of the committee should have been at the meeting. Let battle commence. Another saga following Silver Hill. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And the second letter about Hyde Abbey Gardens is written by Eric Wadham. And it's headed, "No chance of finding any bones there." "Sir, I find it hard to understand the excitement generated by the thought of finding King Alfred's bones. A decade or more ago, at huge expense, the whole area of Hyde Abbey was professionally excavated. The outline of the abbey was defined, and the interior stripped down to natural, revealing the site of the royal burials. There is absolutely no chance of finding any bones there. The Hyde Abbey garden is the consequence of this dig. Subsequently, the council, at the time, in its wisdom, decided to abandon archaeology in Winchester and dispose of the resources centre. If there is effort and money, it would be better spent publishing the details of the dig, the finds, and a present-day view of the abbey for the benefit of future historians." That was written by Eric Wadham, Coley Close, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to items of historical interest, and we have them from 200, 150 and 25 years ago.
200 years ago, December the 19th, 1814. "Oh, my eye, Betty Martin. Many of our most popular vulgarisms have their origin in some whimsical perversion of language or of fact. St. Martin is one of the worthies of the Romish calendar, and a form of prayer to him begins with the words, 'O mihi beate Martina,' which by some desperate fellow, who was more prone to punning than praying, has furnished the plebeian phrase so well known in modern circles of hoarse laughter."
Here are two from 100 years ago, which is to say December the 19th, 1914. This is the first. "The King paid a third visit to Winchester on Wednesday. The first occasion on which His Majesty came to the city was when, as Prince of Wales, he attended to unveil the window in Winchester Cathedral to the memory of riflemen who fell in the South African War. This was within a few months of his being called to the throne. Then His Majesty paid a more formal and public visit to the city in 1912 for the thanksgiving at the cathedral on the completion of the great work of reparation. The third visit, on Wednesday, was for the purpose of reviewing some of his troops. It was entirely a military function." This second piece is actually in the form of a letter, and you'll see who it is at the end. "Sir, before leaving Winchester today, His Majesty the King expressed to me great admiration for the work done in Winchester for the troops in and around the city since mobilisation, and desired me to convey to the citizens his warm appreciation and that of the army for the arrangement so generously provided for the comfort and convenience of the soldiers. He was particularly pleased that numerous soldiers' clubs and refreshment places had been organised, and made special mention of the temporary refreshment places established on Station Hill during the great rush of recruits. He had learned with much pleasure of the willingness with which citizens had provided accommodation for soldiers in their own houses, and expressed his satisfaction at the pains taken for the welfare of the troops. Yours, Alfred Ed Meads, Mayor.
50 years ago, on December the 19th, 1964, residents were worried about rural charm. The danger of South Wanston losing its rural charm appeared to be uppermost in the villagers' minds when they met in the Institute on Tuesday evening for a public meeting about the recently published draft plan for the village. One of their major concerns was the suggestion of the planning authority that all future residential development of any large area of land should be at a higher density than present development, which has been restricted by lack of main sewerage.
25 years ago, December the 22nd, 1989, Alsford members out and about. Alsford members were out and about around the town of Alsford on Wednesday evening, mingling with shoppers and carol singers during the visit of Father Christmas, and they sold £204 worth of draw tickets, benefiting their chosen charity, the Pinder Centre. On Saturday evening, they had their Christmas meal at the Woolpack, Totford, which proved a most enjoyable event, attended by 19 members.
We now move on to the Chronicle comment, which is the Hampshire Chronicle editorial. That will be followed by a letter from Westminster from our MP, Steve Brine. And then after that, it will be a first-person personal view contribution. So we start off with the Chronicle comment.
And the title of it is Not Ideal, But Going Ahead at Long Last. City Council planners have decided at last Silver Hill can be built. That is a good thing. The scheme for flats and shops is not ideal. It would have been better if it had included a bus station, youth facilities, affordable homes and offices. But it simply would not have gone ahead in that guise. As Mike Capocci, the boss of initial developer Thornfield and now involved with Henderson, told a public meeting in the Guildhall in 2001... It is money that drives development. Without money, nothing happens. In the circumstances, it is a good scheme. Many of the criticisms are overblown. There has been plenty of consultation over the years for people who have taken an interest in local affairs. The City Council has been very poor at making that point. Another criticism concerns Silver Hill's height. Yes, it will be big, but not that much taller than the Friars Gate multi-storey car park. The greatest impact will be short-term, during construction. Anyone in Winchester in the late 1980s and early 1990s will grimace at remembering the frequent traffic delays caused by the building of the Brooks Centre. It will be much worse.
Westminster Diary this week is written by Steve Brine, who's MP for Winchester and Charles Ford. Like many parents, I'm sure, I keep telling my children that Father Christmas is busy in his workshop preparing their presents. However, it seems he did pop out a few times of late, and I'm thinking he's been in Winchester. The past few weeks have seen announced the largest public infrastructure investments this area has seen in many years. Alongside my predecessor and a great many councillors, I have campaigned to bring a quieter surface to the M3 motorway throughout Winchester and Chalmers Ford. It was pleasing enough to learn back in the summer that this work would be brought forward from 2020 to be complete by 2017. But Christmas came early last week when we heard it will now be done by the end of March next year. As the Chronicle reported, Shepherdsdown School has been brilliant in helping get us to this point, and I thank head teacher Jane Sampson for her persistence. What everyone should remember, however, is this. While low noise surface will make a big difference, it clearly does not remove the motorway altogether, and I think it's important we all recognise that. Centre Drop Part 2 came up at Junction 9 of the M3A34, where we now have a comprehensive scheme coming forward worth upwards of £100 million. The Prime Minister came to Winchester this summer and got stuck at Junction 9. He sent me a text at the time saying how this spot needs investment, to which I replied, I might just know a man who can. I plan to meet the Highways Agency officials in early January and can't wait to pore over the plans, making sure as we go that Winchester and local traffic, including National Cycle Route 22, is strongly represented at every turn. As I said at Prime Minister's Question Times the other day, this is good news for our area, but any of it is only possible because we have a growing economy again. Of course, it's never enough. I am very aware, for instance, that we need to push for motorway resurfacing north of Junction 9, and that's next in my sights. For now, however, Santa has other priorities, and I think that's fair enough. May I wish you a Merry Christmas and a peaceful New Year.
Joanna Lewis writes, never mind Black Friday, how about Black Thursday? Last Friday, I found Jesus. He was in a church hall in Winchester at a Christmas party for Alzheimer's victims and their carers. Well, if not quite Jesus, then certainly his spirit. Jeff, a volunteer, held Doris's hand while her husband John, who had dressed and fed her, explained to her for the 100th time where they were. Doris was once a formidable schoolteacher. For 50 years, theirs was a marriage that just kept giving. But Alzheimer's is a disease that just keeps taking. Now, on bad days, she has no idea who John is. Yet the government refuses to class it as a terminal illness, so support and research is woefully underfunded. Volunteers help hundreds of families hold Doris's in their loving arms a little longer, and at Christmas they'll have no respite. It was a timely reminder that Winchester is not just the ancient capital of England or home to the oldest high street in Europe. It's also an ancient spiritual capital, since man first found in its rich pasture, fresh water and natural defensive barriers a safe place to keep his nuts. From the cathedral to the old churches nestling down the side street, or the proud Victorian chapels, these are still hubs of care and networks of compassion, often for those we stigmatise, or with nowhere left to turn. Typically, Winchester. Not long ago, a man gently placed a leaflet in my hand outside Debenham saying, "Did I know anyone in pain or sick his church could pray for?" I didn't. But I was tempted to show him my bunion. Don't get me wrong. I'll be joyfully embracing the materiality of the festivities, especially since I've no pressure of expectations on me regarding presents after last year's fiasco. I'm a competitive present buyer. I like to think I know what someone likes. But the news I gave my sister of a year's subscription to the Guinea Pig magazine were not the glad tidings a 40-something mother of two wanted to sit down to after cooking dinner for 10. So, preempting my turn for a turkey, I've gifted myself a karaoke machine. I can't wait for Christmas Day to belt out Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You. It'll be a challenge balancing a large Baileys in one hand, microphone in the other, whilst trying to stop the niece and nephew unplugging me. But after the unedifying spectacle of Black Friday's savage materialism, which cynics say signifies the death of the true spirit of Christmas, to prove them wrong, a candle-lit carol service should be a must this year. Winchester, of course, has since had its own Black Thursday, the day councillors voted, in contempt of public feeling, for a Silver Hill plan that will destroy the historic heart of our city. So it's a perfect time also to visit the cathedral and offer a little prayer. As Jesus said of those who betrayed him for money, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do."
Continuing on the theme of Christmas, this is the time of year for fun, family and festive spirit. And Winchester Cathedral is celebrating Christmas in style with more than 10 services. The first public carol service takes place on Saturday, December the 20th, that's tomorrow, and is repeated on Monday, December the 22nd. Both start at 6:30, but arrive in good time. Doors open at 5:20 p.m. On Sunday, December the 21st, there will be a Christmas celebration at 3:30, including carols and readings to mark the end of the Christmas market. Boy and girl choristers will perform Britain's popular work, A Ceremony of Carols, on Tuesday, December the 23rd, at 1 p.m. Family services will take place at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve, and children are invited to dress as characters from the Christmas story. The crib will be blessed at 5:30 with evensong, and finally, at 11:30 p.m, the Bishop of Winchester will preside at the first Eucharist of Christmas, or Midnight Mass as it is often known. The preacher will be Canon Rowley Ream. Doors open at 10:30. Christmas Day starts with Holy Communion at 8 and is followed by Festal Matins at 10 a.m. At 11:15 there is Festal Eucharist, and at 3:30 Festal Evensong, which ends with a procession to the Christmas tree. The Christmas market closes on Sunday, December the 21st, but the ice rink remains open until the 4th of January. And, of course, all cathedral services are free. Lighting up times. It's quite symmetrical this week. Today, Friday the 19th of December, sun rose at 8:05 in the morning and will set at 4 in the afternoon. And next week, Wednesday the 24th, sun will rise at 8:05 in the morning and will set at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, of course, we're just going through the shortest day. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with your memory stick or your player, the person to contact is Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. There's a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. We now move on to items of general news interest, and the first two articles, I'm afraid, again concern the Silver Hill development. The first one is concerns various objections which are still being made to the scheme, and after that there are some comments back from the developer.
Backlash over approved plans. A backlash against Winchester civic chiefs has begun after their decision to approve contentious changes to the Silver Hill scheme. Residents and campaigners denounced planners for ignoring the public after they unanimously approved the revised £165 million development of shops, homes and public space. Others hailed the decision as a crucial step forward. Mike Caldwell, who led more than 1,000 people through Winchester last month to protest against city bosses' alleged lack of consultation on major development, said a second demonstration is highly likely if things don't change. Pressure groups who joined forces for the Winchester March met on Monday to discuss further action with a view to forcing a culture change at the council. Mr. Caldwell said, "It will happen again, or something else will happen again. We feel that we're not being listened to." The leisure centre activist... The leisure centre activist, who admitted he was not really aware of the Silver Hill controversy until last year, added, "It's about relaying plans to the public at an earlier stage. There needs to be a better public information centre of what's going on." The scheme is set to deliver hundreds of jobs, But residents and some councillors have warned that the city centre will be a rich man's playground unless cheaper homes and shops are built for local workers. Councillor Chris Pines, Labour group leader, said, "We're creating a kind of middle-class, well-off ghetto where people on a low wage find it difficult to live at all. Discount retailers like Poundland and Iceland are unlikely to return to Silver Hill once they're demolished," he said, adding, "If you're on a low income, where are you going to shop? We're looking at other sections of the community and we're not bringing people with us." Dropping affordable housing was one of the most controversial changes to the scheme, but City Council housing boss Councillor Ian Tait defended the deal, saying Henderson's £1 million contribution to cut-rate homes elsewhere was more useful for the council. "People want family housing," he told the meeting. "They do not want a two-bedroom flat on the third floor. We don't want affordable housing provided on this site. Our new build programme is underfunded. We have an insatiable appetite for money should that be given to us." Head of New Homes, Andrew Palmer, said the cash rising to £2 million if Henderson turns enough profit would pay for 7 or 8 homes on council land.
And the second story about the Silver Hill development is headed, "We are investors, not developers." The firm behind Winchester's Silver Hill scheme looked to correct a common misconception as its bosses made their case at Thursday's planning committee. "We are not developers, we are investors," Henderson's director Cameron Fraser said. "We are taking a long-term view. We are not an in-and-out developer expecting a 15% return." The firm has waited a long time to get moving on the project. Company bosses are set to announce their construction programme after Christmas. Preparatory work, including exploratory drilling, has already begun on site, but details of archaeological work, revised bus timetables and precise building specifications must be finalised before diggers can move in. Development Director Martin Perry said, "A number of elements could not be confirmed until planners approve the scheme," adding that more details would be confirmed soon. He said, "The design team has worked hard with a critical eye to ensure that the final scheme is one which we can all be proud of. I am very pleased that elected councillors have now given it the green light. Archaeological remains dating from the medieval era to prehistory are likely to be buried under the site, according to English Heritage. Parts of the site must be excavated, but the firm anticipates a shorter dig than the year-long dig in 1989 before the Brook Centre was built. Henderson had hoped to start work this winter, but the scheme must lie in wait until the results of a High Court challenge against Winchester City Council." Its leader, Councillor Rob Humby, said he was confident of rebutting 2 legal challenges from anti-Silver Hill campaigner Kim Gottlieb. Councillor Kim Gottlieb is taking civic chiefs to a judicial review next month to argue they broke European law by not putting the scheme out to commercial tender when they allowed Henderson to propose its controversial changes. Councillor Gottlieb is also planning a second action against what he calls an improper planning process.
New, quote, pub, quote, opens in care home. A new pub has been opened at a Winchester care home to encourage residents to reminisce. The Mary Rose will enable those at West Home to recreate the good old days, which is an effective way of communicating with people with dementia. West Home manager Christine Chidimamimba said, "Our residents will benefit from the new pub, which has a dry bar, and have been voting to decide upon its name. We will be making full use of this new facility with social activities such as pub quizzes and other games such as cards and darts. It will also provide residents and their families and friends with a new place to socialise. This replica pub allows This replica pub follows positive feedback from similar projects across the country. Local GP, Dr. Jason Bradbury, declared the Mary Rose open and praised the efforts of staff in creating the room as part of reminiscence therapy.
Friars Gate multi-story set to close. More than 100 parking spaces in Winchester city centre will be lost in the next few months when a crumbling multi-story is finally closed. Friars Gate is set to shut as engineers insist the 1970s concrete block is structurally unsound. City Council leader Rob Humby told the Hampshire Chronicle that it could close fairly soon. Capacity at the multi-storey has already halved this year after safety inspectors shut several floors. Its structural safety has been maintained with weekly inspections, but civic chiefs now admit the complex, one of Winchester's tallest buildings, has come to the end of its life. City Transport Chief Mike Southgate said the closure would have little impact on traffic congestion as the car park is rarely full. "We don't want to direct people in there," he said. "I'd rather people use it as a car park of last resort. It's not nice." Councillor Humby admitted that the car park could stay empty until the Silver Hill area is redeveloped, something which could take years even after plans were approved last week. There are currently around 760 off-street spaces in Winchester's shopping quarter, which includes Friars Gate, Colebrook Street and car parks in and around the Brooks Centre.
Well, the next item is very dear to our hearts. It's headed Financial Boost for Talking Newspaper. Winchester's Talking Newspaper has been given a boost of £300. Rawlings Opticians in High Street handed over the cheque after raising the money from customers for a special Healthy Eye Cook booklet. John Richards, who's sitting next to me and looking very pleased with himself, chairman of Winchester Talking Newspaper, accepted the cheque from Richard Rawling, managing director of Rawlings. He said, "I can't express how grateful we are for the generous donation from yourselves and your customers. £300 will make a great difference to us. I absolutely love the recipe booklets too." Sally Hake, branch manager, said, "We wanted to support a local eye-related charity and I'm delighted with the response from our customers. Winchester Talking Newspaper provides weekly recordings of extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle and a monthly magazine free to the blind and partially sighted in the Winchester area." And this is accompanied by a photograph of six people there holding a giant cheque for £300, including our very own John Richards.
Supermum makes capes for the needy. A supermum from a Winchester village has flown hundreds of super capes to needy children in South Africa. Claudia Beard, owner and pioneer of I Am Super Capes, has wrapped and boxed up 450 superhero capes for youngsters at Red Cross Children's Hospital in Cape Town, many of which she has made herself. The 34-year-old full-time mother, who is originally from Johannesburg, has spent evenings and weekends sewing capes of every colour and design with the help of local friends and well-wishers. Together with her 27-year-old friend Rebecca Phillips from Bishopstoke, they have successfully made and packaged dozens of boxes, which she flew out to South Africa on Tuesday. "We've got dinosaurs, we've got Power Rangers. It's been amazing," Mrs. Beard said. "And there are so many different colours and children are just so happy looking at them." She said her son, 2.5-year-old Chase, who lives with her at her Bourneview home in Twyford, was sad to see the noddy cape go, but enjoyed running around the garden pretending to be a real superhero. "I was looking to do something special," she said. "I've done the Philippines and other refugees, but I wanted to do something quite close to home. It's taken me quite a few months, I can tell you. I've had teams of people helping me out roughly 4 or 5 months of work. We've even been sent some from all over the UK. It's just something to put a smile on a child's face.
Doctor to keep job under supervision. Conditions imposed on practice for 1 year. A Twyford doctor who exploited the vulnerability of dying patients by telling them his experimental alternative therapy could help them live longer can keep his job, a tribunal ruled. Dr. Julian Kenyon, who offered sonophotodynamic therapy, or SPDT for short, at the Dove Clinic's Wimpole Street consulting rooms, was told he must work under a string of conditions for a year. One of the restrictions bans him performing the treatment, which uses sonar and light, unless the patient has been directly referred by their GP or consultant. Dr. Kenyon, who has a practice at the Old Brewery in Twyford High Street, was found to have brought the profession into disrepute at a medical practitioner's tribunal service hearing in Manchester. After a 20-minute consultation, which costs £300, he told one terminally ill man with late-stage cancer, "I am not claiming we can cure you, but there is a strong possibility that we would be able to increase your median survival time with the relatively low-risk approaches described here." He also made bold statements about the treatment's supposed benefits to an undercover reporter who posed as the husband of a woman with breast cancer. Ben Fitzgerald, for the General Medical Council, had called for the doctor to be suspended, but MPTS panel chairman Dr. Surendra Kumar said Dr. Kenyon's misconduct was not serious enough to warrant a ban. "The panel considers that suspension would be disproportionate," he said. The panel did not find any evidence of harmful deep-seated personality or attitudinal problems. It has also noted the testimonials from patients and colleagues which attested to their perception of your openness and honesty. The panel instead imposed a string of conditions for 12 months which keep Dr. Kenyon closely monitored by the GMC. He must attend a review hearing towards the end of the period of conditional registration before he is allowed back to unrestricted work. The Dove Clinic website says Dr. Kenyon was founder chairman of the British Medical Acupuncture Society in 1980 and co-founder of the Centre for the Study of Complementary Medicine in Southampton and London, where he worked for many years before starting the Dove Clinic in 2000. The Chronicle yesterday asked Dr. Kenyon for a comment, but he had not responded by the time the paper went to press.
Parking fees raise £40 million for councils. Counties £20 million profit from charges and fines. Hampshire councils have raised more than £40 million from parking in the past year, with Winchester collecting more fees per person than any other town hall. Civic chiefs across the county generated a £20 million profit from parking fees and fines in 2013-14. Winchester City Council collected £6.1 million in 2013-14, the third highest in the county after Southampton and Portsmouth. Excuse me. But it collected an average of £52 per person across the district, a higher rate than any other council and almost double that taken by its city neighbours. Winchester City Council turned a £3.7 million profit on its parking charges. The figures were compiled by motoring group the RAC following an investigation across the country. Parking rose to a fifth of Winchester City Council's income in 2013-14, making it the authority's single biggest earner after council tax. City bosses will use the income boost to reinvest an extra £275,000 in car parks. A council spokesman said its parking fees had not increased for several years, adding, "The difference between the cost of running specific elements of the service and the amount generated by parking fees is not profit. It is public money, income that can be used by the council to keep down council tax and still provide quality services. But the RAC Foundation's director, Professor Stephen Glaister, said parking policy and charges must be about managing traffic, not raising revenue. Parking profits seem to be a one-way street for councils, having risen annually over the past 5 years. Yet over the same period, spending on local roads has fallen about a fifth in real terms. We understand the pressures councils are under, with their overall income still falling and the level of service they had to provide in such areas as social care rising rapidly. Parking revenue across the country has risen by hundreds of millions of pounds in the past 2 years as councils cope with government spending cuts.
Firefighters' success recognised at awards. The county's finest firefighters were recognised at a glitzy awards ceremony at the service's headquarters last week. Celebrating success rewarded the best achievements of Hampshire Fire and Rescue Services staff as well as their partners and volunteers. Last week's awards at the organisation's Lee Road headquarters in Eastleigh saw 28 accolades handed out, with staff rewarded for saving babies, educating youngsters about the dangers of fire, and in a UK first, a certificate marking 50 years of service. Special certificates and meritorious medals were handed out to a number of staff for completing 25 years or more of service. They include 67-year-old Martin Long, who became the first person in the country to receive a 50-year certificate, having started work at the old Winchester headquarters back in 1964. In his time at the service, he has attended most major incidents, including the Winchester Guildhall fire in 1969, the Eastleigh Carriage Works blaze in 1977, and the Fawley Mobile Petrol incident in 1989. Mick Weeks, formerly of Liphook Fire Station, was handed a certificate marking 45 years of service. In his final Celebrating Success Awards, outgoing Chief Officer John Bonney handed out three special awards. Crew Manager Steve Fox scooped one after a remarkable year, during which he rescued and resuscitated a 16-week premature baby girl, helped to save countless lives in the Philippines in the aftermath of Typhoon Haiyan, and invented a new door entry procedure to make firefighters' work easier. Donna Smith, based in Eastleigh, won another of the Chief Officer's awards for her work to educate children in Hampshire through a series of storybooks and teaching resources that are already having a big impact. And the service's fire investigation team were the third winners, with their award recognising their work, which has led to a dramatic improvement in the service's ability to detect arson and other crimes, which has seen more criminals put behind bars. In his final speech as chief officer after 10 years at the top, Mr. Bonney paid tribute to his colleagues and said he had been honoured to serve with them. He also praised the service's response to the deaths of firefighters James Shears and Alan Bannon in the Shirley Towers fire, saying, "There was a courage and clear-sightedness that humbled me." Mr. Bonney was recommended by both the chairman of the Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority, Royston Smith, and his successor, Chief Officer Dave Curry, who praised his wisdom and leadership, while saying Hampshire could now show leadership to the entire country.
Uni Building scoops top design award. New school and university buildings and a museum were named the winners in awards celebrating the best new architecture in the Solent region. The winners of the 2014 Solent Design Awards were announced at a glitzy awards ceremony at Portsmouth's Mary Rose Museum. The Mary Rose Museum, Ryde School and the University of Winchester's St Alphege building scooped the top accolades at the awards. New council offices at Eastleigh House, the university's Burma Road student village, The new public square and civic buildings in the Gateway, Ringwood and the housing development at St Valentine's Close, Winchester, had completed the shortlist. A panel of judges, including architects, lecturers and design experts, named the Saint-Alphege building as the winner of the new Urban Design Award. Panel chairman Lisa Jackson said, "Saint-Alphege demonstrates how a single building can contribute positively to a sense of place by respecting its neighbouring buildings and creating enclosure of a reclaimed piece of public realm." They chose Ryde School's new entrance building as the winner of the Quality Places Award, saying it was a bold approach to the listed building and conservation area, creating a timeless addition to the school of exceptional clarity and rigour, executed with intelligence and honesty. Meanwhile, the spectacular Mary Rose Museum in Portsmouth's historic dockyard won the People's Choice Award, voted for by the public. The awards were organised by the Partnership for South Urban Hampshire, PUSH, and PUSH chairman Sean Woodward said, "Our initial aim in setting up these awards was to encourage the creation of excellent places and spaces for our local community in which to live and work. Good design can make great places, and all these buildings underline this. I applaud all three winners."
Dispute over water, a living nightmare. "All I want for Christmas is a glass of water. A resident near Cheriton says he has been without running water for almost 6 weeks and has spent £30,000 to fix it. Hockley cottages were originally supplied by nearby Holden Farm, but were cut off on October the 31st. Kennedy Goddard says two of the four cottages remain without running water, including his. The 56-year-old said it would be a living nightmare, and he has spent £30,000 installing private boreholes. The first, which was installed in November, was contaminated. The second is currently being tested by Environmental Health to see if the water is safe to drink. It is easy to be cross, but the reality is it becomes soul-destroying when you buy a house and spend a lot of money renovating it," he said. "You start to blame yourself. There's nowhere I can go for help. We're just trying to make the best of a bad deal." He and his wife, Lynn, say they were served no official notice of the cut-off, and they have been using bottled water ever since. Their neighbours, Kathleen and Michael Beer, and Kathleen's 94-year-old mother, May, are also without water, says Mr. Goddard. Once completed, the two cottages will share the new borehole. Mr. Goddard said, "Being 96 and coming up for Christmas and being unable to flush your loo is disgraceful." As previously reported, Susie Corbett, who runs Holden Farm with her husband Charlie, said she did all she could prior to the switch-off. In November, she said, "I was told the cottage's boreholes were all up and running. A private water supply does not have to supply other private people. Those private people have been given 6 months to get their own water supply." When asked for further comment this week, Mrs. Corbett said, "As far as we know, and the environmental health officers have confirmed, all the cottages have water and were never actually without. The issue, we have been told, has been that the water has not been tested. For those who have not had their own private supply before, this has become a worry for them. It is not a worry for environmental health, as the source of the water around here is very pure and used to be bottled as Hazley water once upon a time." Winchester City Council previously said that it was investigating. A spokesman this week said, "Regrettably, there is now a civil dispute between these properties and the borehole company, which has not involved Winchester City Council. The council understands that there is now a sufficient water supply to both properties, but there are outstanding issues related to the water quality which can be resolved if a more conciliatory approach is adopted by both parties."
Doctor weeps at inquest for family. A former Royal Hampshire County Hospital doctor wept as he heard how his wife and daughters died in a house fire in Essex 2 years ago. An inquest was told that during the inferno which claimed their lives, the mother had crouched over her youngest child, covering them both with a blanket, as she struggled in vain to protect the toddler from the flames and smoke. Dr. Saba Usmani, aged 44, and her five children were all fatally overcome or injured in the blaze on October the 15th, 2012, in Harlow. The only surviving member of the family, her husband, Dr. Abdul Shakur, wept during the inquest as details of the death of his family were given. The Shakurs arrived in the UK from Pakistan in September 2010 and initially lived in Winchester. Dr. Shakur, a diabetes specialist, worked at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital before they moved to Harlow in September 2011. He took up a post at the town's Princess Alexandra Hospital, and the family moved into rented end-of-terrace house in the town. Police believe the house had been burgled and a laptop stolen, and are still continuing a murder inquiry.
Plan submitted for 78 homes. Strong opposition from villagers. A plan has been lodged to build 78 new homes in a field on the edge of King Somborne, despite some villagers strongly opposing the plans. Gladman Developments Limited is seeking outline permission from Test Valley Borough Council to boost the village by an estimated 200 people. It wants to build on a 4-hectare field between Eldon Road and Firsdown Road and says around 20 of the new dwellings will be affordable housing. However, the site is designated as countryside in the adopted local plan, is outside King Somborne's settlement boundary and partly in a high-risk flood zone. King Somborne is also 8 miles from the nearest village. The local doctor in Stockbridge is oversubscribed and there is little local employment. Gladman was contacted by a cluster of residents protesting at their plans when they leafleted 555 nearby houses several months ago. One complained that the new homes would totally change the character of the village. Another pointed out that the planned development would increase the number of people living in King Somborne by 11%, at a time when the local plan was seeking to build just 36 new dwellings across all 38 of the villages in the rural Test Valley each year. Concerns were also raised that Stagecoach is set to axe all its current bus services to and from the village next month, so the extra residents would generate an estimated 640 additional car journeys a day around rural lanes. Resident Dan Stevens was worried about whether the village primary school had space for an estimated 100 extra children. He said the school would just not be able to cope with this number, as it would more than double the current capacity. Fellow resident Dr. Leanne T. wrote, "Please no more housing on Eldon Road. The road is already far too busy with cars flying past our house. It is totally unsafe now for children to play outside. This will make it worse. The paint is barely dry on the last development on Eldon Road." When approached by the Chronicle, a spokeswoman for Cheshire-based Gladman Developments Limited said they did not comment on their planning applications.
Festive gifts for the elderly. Winchester's elderly are receiving bags of festive goodies donated by a city business, giving some their only present to open on Christmas morning. Dental Plan specialist Denplan has once more funded a scheme which will see hundreds of pensioners receive a card plus biscuits or chocolates. Winchester Live at Home scheme, which supports older people who want to continue living in their own homes, are distributing the gifts to each of its members. The cost will be covered by a £2,475 donation from Denplan's Community Fund. WLAHS Claire Morgan said, The Christmas bags are extremely important to all of our members. For some, it may be the only present they will receive at what will be a very lonely time of the year. The charity was established in 2000 to provide older people living in the city with support and friendship to help them maintain their independence.
Calendar, sorry, calendar puts spotlight on all things dull. A group of proudly uninteresting men have produced a calendar to celebrate everything boring and tedious. The Dull Men's Club, founded by Winchester man Leland Carlson, has produced its very own calendar, which includes a traffic cone collector, hedge enthusiast, and drain spotter. Founded in 1985, the Dull Men's Club is a unique collection of everything trifling, giving its monotonous voice members a voice. Mr. Carlson, aged 75, of Dury Street, originally from Nebraska, and known to his friends as Lee, said he was a prime example of just how trivial his comrades could be. He said, "When we came to do the calendar a little while ago, we went to do an interview with John Richards, who was Mr. October, and he said, 'What do you want to photograph? An apostrophe?' We asked him to take us somewhere nearby where there was a mistake in a shop window or something, and he said there were none since he's been there. Now boasting around 5,000 members, the group has grown from strength to strength, gathering media interest from around the globe. Over the years, there's been a lot of media interest in us," Mr. Carlson added. "We've been approached by TV companies in Canada and Germany, and we've even been commissioned to do a book, The Dull Men of Britain. The book will feature 42 bland blokes all ready to talk about their hobbies. The calendar, which costs just £10, also includes 125 national boring days, including the Great Backyard Bird Count and Mr. Carlson's very own Fill Your Staplers Day on March the 9th.
I think we should just add at this stage that the John Richards referred to in that article is not the John Richards associated with the Talking Newspaper, who is certainly not a dull person.
Thank you.
Or October.
And in fact, for those who are interested, the John Richards mentioned in the article that Margot just read is the founder of the Apostrophe Preservation Society, and of which I am a member, incidentally. Whether that means... Anyway, let's not go into that. Anyway, on to this article I have here. Park and ride lit up like a Christmas tree. Winchester civic chiefs, looking at ways of saving money, are lighting their park and ride, which shines like a Christmas tree. Councillors raised concerns about light pollution at the South Winchester Park and Ride near Compton. Councillor Linda Gemmell told the Overview and Scrutiny Committee, "It still looks like a Christmas tree. My husband, who travels a lot, says coming home to Winchester there is always a beacon in the distance." Councillor Mike Southgate, portfolio holder for Communities and Transport who represents Compton, said, "I get constant complaints from local members and the parish council. The principal reason is CCTV needs light to monitor cash points. Without CCTV, other activities will take place, which is undesirable. I will work on it because light levels are very high." Councillor Southgate said he was looking into putting solar panels on the buildings at the park and ride sites to make them self-sufficient.
Student mugged for his iPod. A student was robbed in Winchester as he was listening to his music. The 19-year-old was walking along Romsey Road just before 1 a.m. last Wednesday when two men ran up to him near St. James's Tavern. He was assaulted before falling to the floor. They took his iPod and earphones, worth approximately £55, and ran off when a car approached. One of the thieves has been described as wearing a navy zip-up hooded jacket and navy tracksuit sports trousers. People would like to hear from anyone who witnessed the incident or saw or heard anything suspicious in the area at the time. In particular, they would like to hear from taxi drivers who may have been driving around the Rumsey Road area, or anyone who saw the two men running from the scene.
Boomtown asks to increase capacity. Boomtown Fair has applied to increase its numbers a year ahead of schedule. The event at Matterley Bowl, near Winchester, has applied to the City Council to raise the capacity of its 2015 event from 45,000 to 49,999. They say 50,000. A spokesman for Boomtown said, "The festival already holds a licence that will allow the event to expand to this capacity in 2016. But we feel it is necessary to have the scope to extend this in 2015. They said public sales will not increase. The deadline for public responses is December the 24th. There will be a meeting for those that live close to the site on January the 20th.
Skate ambassadors now being trained. Winchester City Council is training people to become skate ambassadors at a recently refurbished park. The role includes making the skate park off Gordon Road a friendly place and discouraging antisocial behaviour, a council spokesman said. It started last June, when designs of the new park were being drawn up and was properly brought in from the park's launch in October this year. Four people are already trained, with nine in the process. A council spokesman said, being a ranger is basically about being a good role model for the park and promoting the type of behaviour we want to see. They also have access to a cupboard of useful equipment to help them look after the park, such as removing litter and leaves. We want to create pride in the park and a safe, welcoming, friendly atmosphere, and they help us achieve this. They can talk to young users about the park and awareness of other users, and if there is an accident, they know how to request first aid assistance. They do not get into confrontational situations, and they do not teach. We are currently arranging wristbands to make them distinctive.
Daisy's festive design is a hit with MP. A Winchester schoolgirl has beaten off all others to win the Winchester and Chandlers Ford MP's Christmas card competition. Daisy Conway of Compton All Saints Primary School has been announced the winner of Steve Bryan's fourth annual contest of this year's 52 finalists. The Year 6 pupil follows in the footsteps of previous winners Eleanor Ring, Liam Skeet and Ellis Gauntlet Boak, earning herself a family ticket for the Theatre Royal's 2014 pantomime Sleeping Beauty. Nearly 500 children took part in this year's event, submitting a range of different designs which are now on display at the Children's Library at Winchester's Discovery Centre, where they were mediated. Local artist Daphne Vaughan helped Mr. Bryan with the judging. I look at children's artwork a lot, and I could see just how much time some children had spent in making their cards, she said. It was great to see so many imaginative and creative ideas, and a lot of good drawing and painting as well. Because the quality of entries was high, it made the judging very difficult. Awards were also handed out for different year groups, with the reception prize going to Kingsworthy Primary School pupil Lucifer Dean and the Year One award presented to Grace Gunn of Stanmore Primary School. Ava Child from Prince's Mead won the Year Two award, and Sherborne House student Adi Rachid took home Year Three. The Year Four prize was collected by Kira Wood, and Jessica Peters from South Monston was given the Year Five award. There were also two special commendations for Clara Bocchi from Sherborne House, as well as the entire Linnets Infants class at Shepherdstown School for their group effort.
We actually have a copy of this Christmas card in the studio here, which was sent to us by Steve Bryan. Very colourful, a great white globe with a reindeer pulling a sledge rushing across it, and a Santa with a red Santa in the, with his bag of presents sitting on this globe, and something it's looks like a little tree, but it's on it's written North Pole. So a really charming card, and it's, as I say, it was sent to us by Steve Bryan, and it says inside, "Dear John," that's John Richards, our chairman, "and all the team, with best wishes for Christmas and the new year. Thank you for all you do, Steve Bryan." So that was very nice that we actually have this card here in the studio.
Dig may not occur any time soon. There will be widespread excitement, but also some dread, at the prospect of another archaeological dig to find the bones of King Alfred. As reported elsewhere in this newspaper, there have been talks involving the city council and university about re-excavating part of the site of Hyde Abbey. Researchers have been encouraged that a bone believed to be that of Alfred was dug up in a city council dig there in the late 1990s. However, garden lovers will be unhappy that the unique Hyde Abbey garden, built on the site of the excavation, would be severely impacted. Hope may be at hand, Belgarn can report. Council Chief Executive Simon Eden said, first, a full assessment must be made of that first dig between 1997 and 1999 to see whether another dig is justified. Seeing as the major digs in Winchester between the 1950s and the 1970s are only now being published, that may mean a new dig at some point in 2045?
That concludes our extracts for this week. I hope you enjoyed them all. There were some fairly serious ones then, but also there were quite a few which are of a sort of lighter nature. I must confess a couple which I thought would have perhaps been more appropriate for April the 1st, but anyway,
nevertheless.
Anyway, our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to all our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who are Margot Meredith.
Goodbye and happy Christmas.
John Richards.
Yes, goodbye and happy Christmas from me.
And Peter Lydiard.
Oh, goodbye and happy Christmas from me too.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. And from all of us, everybody involved with the Talking Newspaper, we send our very best wishes to all our listeners for a very happy Christmas. And a reminder that there will not be another edition until the 9th of January. It's just the way that Christmas and New Year fall this year, which means that there will be a two-week break. So the next edition will be that on the 9th of January. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.